The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, continuing with the final portion of Chapter 22, The Supermental Thought and Knowledge, bottom of page 835. The supermental thought, as has already been indicated, has three elevations of its intensity. One of direct thought vision, another of interpretative vision pointing to and preparing the greater revelatory idea sight, a third of representative vision recalling, as it were, to the spirit's knowledge the truth that is called out more directly by the higher powers. In the mind, these things take the form of the three ordinary powers of the intuitive mentality: the suggestive and discriminating intuition, the inspiration and the thought that is of the nature of revelation. Above, they correspond to three elevations of the supramental being and consciousness and, as we ascend, the lower first calls down into itself and is then taken up into the higher, so that on each level, all the three elevations are reproduced. But always there predominates in the thought essence the character that belongs to that level's proper form of consciousness and spiritual substance. It is necessary to bear this in mind, for otherwise the mentality, looking up to the ranges of the supermind as they reveal themselves, may think it has got the vision of the highest heights, when it is only the highest range of the lower ascent that is being presented to its experience. At each height, sano sanum aruhat, the powers of the supermind increase in intensity, range, and completeness. There is also a speech, a supramental word, in which the higher knowledge, vision, or thought can clothe itself within us for expression. At first, this may come down as a word, a message, or an inspiration that descends to us from above, or it may even seem a voice of the self or of the Ishwara, Vani Adesha. Afterwards, it loses that separate character and becomes the normal form of the speech when it expresses itself in the form of an inward speech. The thought may express itself without the aid of any suggestive or developing word, and only, but still quite completely, explicitly, and with its full contents, in a luminous substance of supramental perception. It may aid itself, when it is not so explicit, by a suggestive inward speech that attends it to bring out its whole significance. Or the thought may come not as silent perception, but as speech self-born out of the truth and complete in its own right and carrying in itself its own vision and knowledge. Then it is the word revelatory, inspired or intuitive, or of a yet greater kind capable of bearing the infinite intention or suggestion of the higher supermind and spirit. It may frame itself in the language now employed to express the ideas and perceptions and impulses of the intellect and the sense mind, but it uses it in a different way and with an intense bringing out of the intuitive or revelatory significances of which speech is capable. The supramental word manifests inwardly with a light, a power, a rhythm of thought, and a rhythm of inner sound that make it the natural and living body of the supramental thought and vision, and it pours into the language, even though the same is that of mental speech, another than the limited intellectual, emotional, or sensational significance. It is formed and heard in the intuitive mind or supermind, and need not at first, except in certain highly gifted souls, come out easily into speech and writing. But that too can be freely done when the physical consciousness and its organs have been made ready, and this is a part of the needed fullness and power of the integral perfection. The range of knowledge covered by the supramental thought, experience, and vision will be commensurate with all that is open to the human consciousness, not only on the earthly, but on all planes. It will, however, act increasingly in an inverse sense to that of the mental thinking and experience. The center of mental thinking is the ego, the person of the individual thinker. The supramental man, on the contrary, will think more with the universal mind, or even may rise above it, and his individuality will rather be a vessel of radiation and communication, to which the universal thought and knowledge of the spirit will converge, than a center. The mental man thinks and acts in a radius determined by the smallness or largeness of his mentality and of its experience. The range of the supramental man will be all the earth and all that lies behind it on other planes of existence. And finally, the mental man thinks and sees on the level of the present life, though it may be with an upward aspiration, and his view is obstructed on every side. His main basis of knowledge and action is the present with a glimpse into the past and ill-grasped influence from its pressure and a blind look towards the future. He bases himself on the actualities of the earthly existence, first on the facts of the outward world, to which he is ordinarily in the habit of relating 9/10, if not the whole, of his inner thinking and experience, then on the changing actualities of the more superficial part of his inner being. As he increases in mind, he goes more freely beyond these to potentialities which arise out of them and pass beyond them. His mind deals with a larger field of possibilities. But these, for the most part, get to him a full reality only in proportion as they are related to the actual, and can be made actual here, now, or hereafter. The essence of things he tends to see, if at all, only as a result of his actualities, in a relation to and dependence on them. And therefore, he sees them constantly in a false light or in a limited measure. In all these respects, the supramental man must proceed from the opposite principle of truth vision. The supramental being sees things from above, in large spaces, and at the highest, from the spaces of the infinite. His view is not limited to the standpoint of the present, but can see in the continuities of time, or from above, in the indivisibilities of the spirit. He sees truth in its proper order, first in the essence, secondly in the potentialities that derive from it, and only last in the actualities. The essential truths are to his sight self-existent, self-seen, not dependent for their proof on this or that actuality. The potential truths are truths of the power of being in itself and in things, truths of the infinity of force, and real apart from their past or present realization in this or that actuality, or the habitual surface forms that we take for the whole of nature. The actualities are only a selection from the potential truths he sees, dependent on them, limited, and mutable. The tyranny of the present, of the actual, of the immediate range of facts, of the immediate urge and demand of action, has no power over his thought and his will, and he is therefore able to have a larger willpower founded on a larger knowledge. He sees things not as one on the level surrounded by the jungle of present facts and phenomena, but from above, not from outside and judged by their surfaces, but from within, and viewed from the truth of their center. Therefore, he is nearer the divine omniscience. He wills and acts from a dominating height, and with a longer movement in time, and a larger range of potencies. Therefore, he is nearer to the divine omnipotence. His being is not shut into the succession of the moments, but has the full power of the past and ranges seeingly through the future, not shut in the limiting ego and personal mind, but lives in the freedom of the universal, in God, and in all beings, and all things, not in the dull density of the physical mind, but in the light of the self and the infinity of the spirit. He sees soul and mind only as a power and a movement, and matter only as a resultant form of the spirit. All his thought will be of a kind that proceeds from knowledge. He perceives and enacts the things of the phenomenal life in the light of the reality of the spiritual being and the power of the dynamic spiritual essence. At first, at the beginning of the conversion into this greater status, the thought will continue to move for a shorter or a longer time to a greater or a less extent on the lines of the mind, but with a greater light and increasing flights and spaces and movements of freedom and transcendence. Afterwards, the freedom and transcendence will begin to predominate. The inversion of the thought view and the conversion of the thought method will take place in different movements of the thought mind, one after the other, subject to whatever difficulties and relapses, until it has gained on the whole and effected a complete transformation. Ordinarily, the supramental knowledge will be organized first, and with the most ease in the processes of pure thought and knowledge, jnana, because here the human mind has already the upward tendency and is the most free. Next, and with less ease, it will be organized in the processes of applied thought and knowledge, because there the mind of man is at once most active and most bound and wedded to its inferior methods. The last and most difficult conquest, because this is now to his mind a field of conjecture or a blank, will be the knowledge of the three times, Trikala Drishti. In all these, there will be the same character of a spirit seeing and willing directly above and around, and not only in the body it possesses, and there will be the same action of the supramental knowledge by identity, the supramental vision, the supramental thought, and supramental word, separately or in a united movement. This, then, will be the general character of the supramental thought and knowledge, and these its main powers and action. It remains to consider its particular instrumentation, the change that the supermind will make in the different elements of the present human mentality, and the special activities that give to the thought its constituents, motives, and data. End of chapter 22, page 840.